This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hello, listeners, and farewell to the Roys. With a powerful, masterful pain sponge of an episode, Succession has come to an end. And as I said last week on my interview collection show, it's been a real honor to cover this series for the past few years, but it's not done yet because this series finale is so deserving of a discussion. And I'm so happy to have with me Eric Anderson and Ryan McQuaid of Awards Watch. Welcome. So great to see your lovely face eggs.
Hello. Hello. I cannot wait to continue talking about Succession because it's all I've been talking about for the last 12 hours.
It's all right. Well, the disgusting brothers are here. Woo!
Yes. This is what I thought we'll do. We're going to run through this episode piece, but I wanted to get just briefly your overview thoughts. Eric, were you happy?
It was fine. No, just kidding. Just kidding. That was for Ryan.
Anytime Eric doesn't, every time he's like kind of, or it's not like blown away by something, goes, it's fine. And then he just walks away from it and you're like, but yeah. But I liked it. And it's like, you know, it's just his Logan Roy fuck off. You know
what I mean? No, I loved it. And it's just really difficult to do series finales, especially in just the era of social media and the nonstop barrage of opinions and comments. But I thought it was a pretty fantastic ending. It definitely, all the breadcrumbs were there. It wasn't anything super shocking or surprising. And that might be the reason why it was so successful, because there wasn't any attempt to do something really off brand or crazy. Everything tracked, and that's I think a more honest way to treat your characters and your story than trying to do something like bigger than all of it.
That's the way I feel as well. This was so elegant, making it timeless. I mean, there's no stupid twisty twists, no one waking up from a dream, no stunts. They made the right choices. We know our characters so well that even in situations that we kind of felt were coming, you're so invested in these big feelings that they're having. And that is Shakespeare. That's what makes a timeless drama. It's doing those things that we really can relate to. Ryan, do you feel the same way?
No, this is awful finale. Yeah, no, I loved you were it. Like... It's I think it's...
You are not a serious person.
I think it's such a, I think it's great. And it doesn't end the way I think. I mean, the thing about it was, is all week I had anxiety about how it was going to end. Cause I just wanted to know, cause I'm just like, we've been on this ride for, you know, 4+ years, 5 years. And it's just like, just tell us already, for God's sakes. You've just been like sort of just edging us along here for such a long time. And this episode had everything that we love about the show, but its ending is, you know, we talk Shakespearean. So many people were bringing up the references to even movies like The Godfather Part Two, and because they were trying to make the correlation between Kendall and Michael Corleone and everything.
And Fredo and
you know, and the family, just the whole family dynamic too about it. And in a way, it's almost like the opposite of all that, because by the end of that, you know, Michael, obviously he gets off scot-free, but he loses pretty much everything. And Kendall, and as we're going to talk about, he essentially just doesn't get anything. He's just sitting there on a park bench, just like Pacino, but he doesn't have any power. He's played
money,
all of his cards.
No power, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No family, nothing.
And you know, I think that Eric was telling me for weeks that this is exactly how it was going to be in his mind, that the three of them wouldn't win. The winner itself is not surprising either, considering the fact that, like, if you, I've seen TikToks about it or whatnot, like the, you know, what Tom's last name means and stuff like that. And I was like, well, that makes total sense. But it's not about really the destination. About the end point, really, in this episode. It's how we get there, because there are a little bit of peaks and valleys, and especially through, I think, Shiv's character. And her emotions are, you know, she's going from one side to the next. She's been doing this all season. And that's what makes Sarah Snook's performance so fantastic. It's brilliantly written. I think it's incredible. I think, you know, HBO, at least for my opinion, minus maybe Game of Thrones, they are able to stick landings in their series finales better than any studio, because they have the confidence to allow their showrunners to make the endings that they want to. I think of, like, you know, The Sopranos, I think of The Wire, I think of The Leftovers as a fantastic example. Even their miniseries and whatnot, Six Feet Under. They're just able to do it better than everybody else because those creatives have complete control, which is why, you know, writers and everybody should get paid fair wages and everything, because this is a series dedicated essentially to what's on the page. But I thought it was, I can't stop thinking about it. I've been thinking about it all day, just how tragic it is. Yeah.
Why don't we start with Tom and Shiv? The episode starts with Jeremy Strong or Kendall coming into the office. They don't have enough votes. They're trying to figure out sort of where Roman is. And then Shiv and Tom have this conversation where Tom suggests we should Czechoslovakia. Where do you see their relationship in the beginning of this episode?
Not that far from the end of it, actually, because their relationship is so largely transactional, even though there is that phone call where Shiv is sort of imploring maybe they could have like a real relationship. And it's the thing that's been kind of great about a show like this and characters like this, which are really horrible people and we're supposed to hate. It's not that we're supposed to root for them, but you have to kind of give some kernels there that we can feed off of. And that was definitely a moment for her, but it's all too little too late. And that's kind of the name of the game of this final season, and definitely the final.
Well, the balcony fight, one of the best marriage scenes I've seen ever, I would say. And the things they said to each other is difficult to come back from. But she also says, we've already said the worst. We can't, you know, all we can do is go forward. But he doesn't seem to be there at the moment.
No, because he's still trying to constantly figure out how he can get from underneath her. Because he is not his own success at all. His success is entirely dependent on other people. So he has to find his ways, and he did it at the end of season three, and he did it here. Even though he didn't really do it, it was sort of done to him by Mattson in that conversation. But yeah, he is fighting for his very existence.
Well, I mean, you see it all season long, especially after Logan passes, where I think of when Carl does that analysis of him in the kitchen at the reception or one of the wakes there at the house. And he's just basically like, you're out of your marriage, essentially. And this whole network is falling apart. And if we don't elect the president on our side, you're basically screwed. And also your testimony and everything that you've done from season two. And it's
Carl, like, is such this, a bitch. I love Carl.
I love Carl and Frank. God, can I get a spinoff of them just like living it up?
I want Carl and
with
Frank
the golden,
like,
parachutes.
Besides, like, that's totally the name of it too. They were,
yeah, Carl and Frank, like Grace and Frankie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But no, I mean, their relationship has always been, I mean, from the beginning, it's kind of been doomed. I mean, the way that he proposed to her to their wedding, and having the ex-boyfriend there. And then, but especially I think of the season two finale, which is one of the greatest episodes of television I've ever seen, where they're having that conversation on the beach about their marriage and essentially, and that's like, we've been like, they've been dead since then. That relationship has been cursed, and they have been playing each other perfectly since. I mean, like, Tom is essentially, I mean, he is the winner here, but there's, you know, but it's, he's a going to be a basically a garbage man. Is that what is that? That's the line, right? That like that he's going to be, while
he's
Madsen
a pain
is
sponge. It's horrible. Yeah, it sounds like the worst job of description.
It sounds exactly like the testimony again of being a scapegoat for any bad things that Madsen does. But again, that's such a fascinating character, especially for our time, because, you know, these billionaires buy up these smaller or these giant companies. They take whatever they want, and then all of them go bankrupt or whatever, or they go under, and those parts are basically put at the feet of people like Tom, but he doesn't care because it's going to be, you know, millions or billions of dollars still in his pocket or whatever. That when you really think of it down the road. But I think that Tom is in Shiv's relationship is so interesting by the end of it, because, you know, the editing of this show, if you could just give a you know, a dump truck full of Emmys to something, it would be the editing of the show, because the way in which phone calls by the end, conversations, especially like Carolina's conversation with Shiv, which is kind of a nod to then later when, you know, Hugo goes up to Tom and it's like, where's Carolina? Yeah. It's like, they've already spoken about this. It's incredible. But then again, you know, too, it's there, that moment where he puts his hand out, she can embrace the hand, but she can't because of the fact that she's still processing, I believe, what she's done here. And really, honestly, not just what she's done to her brothers, but what she's done to herself. And essentially going into exactly what she didn't want to be, which is to be her mother. And I find that to be absolutely fascinating from all the conversations that she's had, or we've seen briefly with their mom, especially the one, I think it's season one, where she's like, you know, I'm glad you didn't have children, because you'd be a terrible mother like me. It's like,
he almost reiterates that at the funeral too, in just the cruelest way.
Well, and then she kind of twists the knife with them when they come back from the ocean at the towards the middle of the episode. Like, I know I was a terrible mother. You know what I mean?
They're all like, yeah, you fucking suck.
Yeah, you were.
let's get into that part, and then we'll get back to the polarizing decision that Shiv made. I have to say, the whole segment in the Caribbean is some of the best. They all go there where the mother, she's basically, as she says, she's caring for Roman, who doesn't want to, you know, that he says, fuck you, I'm not fragile. And he's actually wearing a $14 Walmart boys shirt. So you can see,
I saw that just a few minutes ago, and I'm like, there's a Walmart on this island?
What's yes. going on? or she had his old clothes. I was thinking that that was his boy's clothes in some room.
Like his
there
high
at
school
house.
Kind of clothes.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, he's 5'6 and probably 130 pounds. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can get a small somewhere. Yeah.
Anyway, the dynamic between Harriet Walter, who's just a queen, and the kids, talk to that, Eric.
What about horrible mothers and hating your mom? Because I can.
I was going to say, for Eric being the horrible mother of Awards Watch, yes, yeah, speak to your existence already as this. I mean, it felt very close to home for you.
Here's my question: has she invited them there actually to have this dinner, or has she invited them there so Peter can give?
Oh my gosh.
Pitch.
The bitch is so good.
That poor creature and his friend. Oh my god, that was hilarious.
The guy just kind of lurks. He just like kind of lurks out on the right of the camera, and you're just like, oh my god, are they really like, you really want to get on this right now? Like right as they're about to get their money the next day, essentially.
Yeah, the timing is so freaking hilarious. Okay, to your question, I don't think anyone on this show or in this family does anything for altruistic purposes. So there's definitely an undercurrent there, because she reveals it at the table when she reveals her opinion on what they should do, rather than just kind of bring them there to have that conversation. She does invoke her own opinion there. So yes, she did bring them there, or get them there in order to do that. But it doesn't mean that there isn't, you know, bits of compassion.
Now, what do you make of Roman actually going to Mom after he's had this experience?
Because he was, from the announcement of Logan's death to the funeral to that, he was broken to his childhood, which is why that child's shirt makes so much sense. Mm. He is fragile. He is absolutely a little boy at that point in every possible way. And I mean, even they all three of them sort of beg each other for this CEO job in the most infantile way, but his is probably the most, because he really is just absolutely in pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he wanted his mommy.
I mean, he's a child. He always has been. His behavior has always been childish. He's never been taken the most serious. You know, he has to go and do all the things in season one and various other things.
And he's not even the youngest. Shiv is younger than him.
Shiv is youngest, like confirmed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But he acts like the youngest.
Yes. He acts like the baby.
He acts like the biggest baby boy. That's what it is. And I think that, I mean, it goes like, to sum up their relationship, is when they're trying to figure out when they all three are going to come back together to take down Mattson, who's going to be, you know, the CEO. And Kendall, of course, is like, it's me. I'm number one boy, you know, energy, and just like manic and crazy throughout that whole conversation. So like Kendall always is super desperate. Mm-hmm. You have Shiv, who it just doesn't, they're right. It doesn't make any sense for them to offer that up after she tried to sabotage the deal that they made. So it makes perfect sense. But when, you know, when Kendall brings up the fact that he couldn't even get through the eulogy, when he's been a mess of himself, he doesn't have an heir, he hasn't, you know, he's a complete kind of mystery in the wind, and he doesn't have any experience in doing this. And not, and, you know, I remember back to, I think it's season one, when Stewie talks about how their COO, which is Roman at the time, is a complete joke. Mm-hmm. And that is something that just never goes away. Mattson always laughed him off, especially on the mountain. He's just laughing at him. It's like, you just made a huge mistake. You're an idiot. And you always have been. And Logan essentially kind of knew that by the end, because the one he could easily manipulate was not Shiv and was not Kendall anymore. It was Roman. Mm-hmm. That's why he's calling him. That's why he's trying to paw at him and play on his feelings, because he has actual feelings. And that was kind of the beauty of Logan up until the end. And what's so great about their interactions is when he said, well, Dad told me it was going to be me. And then Kendall says, he's been telling me it was me since I was 7. And he goes, if you don't have any photos.
No, Pixar, it didn't happen.
No, Pixar, it didn't happen. But it's the same. It's childish, because it's the same argument mm-hmm. that they can make to him, but it doesn't matter to him. And he just loves to walk away from it, because he doesn't want to have any of this conflict by the end. And he's scared of it. He's scared of losing it. He's a baby. And
yeah,
that's what's so great about the performance.
Yeah, psychologically. You know? He just can't take having to make any decisions at all in any of these interactions in this episode, that he's just falling apart. And the smile at the end when he's free just says everything about, you know, that he can't take it anymore. But that kitchen scene, that scene where they're actually having a good time and they're bonding, man. And they decided and they're all set to go. But you know, after watching the series, that okay, we're getting a little air here. It's wonderful to see them have a good time. But you just know that this is going to go to hell.
Reminds me of the boat scene in season
exactly.
one, where it's the one moment of a pure, just like, oh, these three can be children or laugh a little bit or just not have to worry about the bullshit of this entire thing, this entire weight that is about to happen. And as we know from that episode, and then we know from this episode, that's the nicest point you're going to get. And then the rest of it is kind of downhill from there for the rest of them. And it takes a lot of pieces to put it back together. And what's really been interesting about this whole show, and I'm sure we'll talk about our theories, is thinking, you know, not like a stupid person on Twitter saying I'm going to make an AI generated thing, but what we could think about where these characters are going to go based off of the history of this show and how they have done horrible, disgusting, backstabbing things to one another. And yet they were at this point, like you're mentioning, through all this history of four seasons, still in a room making this disgusting sludge for a meal fit for a king, essentially. And
a bag of nobbies.
And a bag of nobbies. Frozen nobbies. You know what I mean? So, and then the licking of the cheese, which is...
That was really, really
iconic.
Horny. And
yeah. Yes. Eric was like,
very
I have
romantic.
Some Gouda in the fridge.
I like it. Oh, man.
The levels, the different levels that Jeremy Strong is doing in his acting throughout this episode, I mean, he's basically doing every single feeling, I mean, from happiness to despair to absolute evil to turning into his own father. I mean, he's always incredible, but this particular episode, I have to say,
it was definitely all the acting.
Yes.
And
it was all
wonderful.
Of it.
And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
It was like Goldie Hawn in First Wives. I have all the emotions. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
That was a comparison. Goldie
I
Hawn
was...
Jeremy.
Goldie Hawn and Jeremy Strong. Can't wait to see him next time. Be like, you were really giving Goldie Hawn. But no, honestly, I know that everybody this season has been talking about Culkin and how he should win, and his performance is phenomenal. But the more and more I've watched this season and gone back and watched clips, and I rewatched segments of the finale this morning, Strong's performance is out of bounds here. This is an incredible performance. It's so layered, and it's so sad, and so tragic. And yes, we've seen this character like this before, but like you're mentioning, it just, there's a sense of the confidence that was building, especially after Logan's death. I mean, obviously, you know, the episode three this year, they all give highlighted bits within that whole thing. But I mean, obviously Kendall, you're never just going to be able to get away from the fact that, like, Kendall says, like, you know, I love you, but I can never forgive you. And he's talking essentially to the ghost of his dad already, you know, by the time he's on the phone. I just think that by the end of this too, his manic, desperate, childish way he is handling himself when that final vote comes in is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely extraordinary, because when Shiv is saying, I don't think you'd be good at this job, and all of us people that love Kendall, like myself, are like, yeah, BS, whatever. But his actions explain exactly why he is not the number one person for this job or should never get this job, because it's sick. Like, as much as he's saying this is all sick, him going to do it, isn't it? Yeah, it's an addiction. He's an addict. He killed a kid. You know, and then he's like backtracking on
which
all that,
one?
You know, which one? They're like, I don't know. Do you got a, you know, like a laundry list, essentially? I mean, but then also for them to wait and use his vulnerability of when he said that in the season three finale, to use that at the last moment as a line of defense to stop him, essentially from becoming Logan because of the way he goes after Shiv at the door. And then Kendall kind of, it's like, no, she's pregnant, you jerk. Like, you're not gonna put your hands on him, even though he starts literally, he takes his brother to the ground. It's incredible. And then he's right back where he was at episode 5 of season 1, where he doesn't have the votes and he's lost in a void. It's perfect. It's a full circle moment for him.
The hug that he gives Roman, this is before they go into that incredible the fight, yeah, when he's basically hugging him so hard that the stitches break and he goes up. What do you make of that? Is he just controlling him? Is that what Logan would have done?
I don't think Logan would have done that, no.
I don't think he would have hugged him.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he would have hugged him.
I think it's the moment that he's trying to separate himself from his father. He obviously does want to be a lot of his father. He probably knows that he is not quite the same cutthroat that his father was. So I want to believe that moment is genuine, just as the kitchen scene at their mother's was genuine, because it was completely free of everything else.
He's making him bleed, though. It's such a violent hug.
It is a little bit.
I felt exactly the opposite.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because he's saying ow ow, and then he looks up and he's all bleeding. He's hugging him so hard.
A little bit
hard.
Of a power move.
Yeah. It's not just hit the power of his hug. It is also Roman's extreme
emotions
coming out, yeah, too, because he's forcing it just as much, and only is kind of at that point where they realize, oh okay, every single vein in his forehead is popping and the stitches are popping too.
When I was watching it, I thought a little bit about to what Logan always said about Kendall, which is, you know, you have to be a killer. And
I mean,
he was. And I think in that scene, you know, Kendall obviously has got the throne in sight, right? And he's hugging him, and he's hugged his siblings before. They've done, like, they say, like, can we do the hug thing? You know what I mean? Like in the season and stuff like that. Yeah, can we do that or whatnot? But this one feels like it's powerful. It's like, you know, he's mentioned to him in this episode about breaking down. He calls him a fuck up at the, just like Logan would maybe do at the end of episode 9 of this season, where he's like, the president to be should be in our hand, not in the other way around. And that's, ever since he said that to him, he's been on a downward, I mean, obviously from the speech, but then when you say that, that's the nail in the coffin for him to leave and get out of there and go on this spiral of an emotional downfall. So then when he's doing that, it's almost like, in a lot of ways too, I felt like Ken just being like, you know, the stitches don't hurt nearly as much as you screwing up this deal or anything. Just suck it up. You know what I mean? A little bit. There's a little bit of that in there as well. There is a little bit of frustration in Kendall of the fact that he has had to now, instead of worrying about all these other votes, he's had to worry about the one that is the most sure thing for him, which is his brother, who's fallen apart in a 24-hour span and before the vote. And he's had to fly all over these places to, like, secure the one that was the easiest thing to get. So I think that
it's
there's a little
bit of
they
all have, like, extreme ADHD. They're all such goddamn spaz monkeys. Oh, my God.
Remember Logan slapping Roman in the car?
Yes.
And really sort of violently from nowhere, and then just saying that, I didn't do it. And he just...
Well, and in the room, too. I mean,
and in the... Yeah. And, yeah.
That's why I had the feeling that he was so frustrated that Logan, he was doing what Logan used to do to Roman. And then
twisting the knife on him.
Especially when he sort of attacks him in that little room before the vote.
He definitely does it. He definitely does it to Shiv later.
To Roman's defense immediately. And he does that throughout the show, constantly coming to the defense in moments of extremeness like that. So that's why, that's kind of why I feel like that hug, as intense as it was, sort of is a combination of compassion, but a little teeny bit of Fredo, a little bit of You're betraying
like, you screwed
me.
This all up, and now we got to this point. You know what I mean? Could have been a
People
lot easier.
Are comparing that to the specific Fredo sort of sitting in a chair, and Al Pacino sort of is much taller than him and hugging him very controllingly.
I think that's kind of one of, again, the successes of the show is that you can see the homages and stuff, but it's Armstrong and they're not so locked into them. They just want to, you know, use these little bits and pieces because, yes, ultimately this is a really classic story. It's not a new story, but. So it's really easy to make homages like that and connections like that.
I mean, he is also triggered by the fact that he sees Jerry, which I just find
extremely
fascinating. I think that that's the most fascinating thing out of the scene. Oh, the martini at the end. J. Smith Cameron's tweet today of like, my ex wants me back. I was like, girl, thank you. Jerry basically becoming second in command, it seems like, or at least a part of it, coming back into the fold.
A little bit more to do in the finale, but
yeah, I do that, too. I wish she had like a line or something.
You know. Other than the video, which incredible, by the way.
Oh my god!
Let's jump to that one because people are always saying who won, and that's such a kind of a ridiculous because this.
The
story
board
has
won.
Never been about winning. It was about, you know, the destination. But I have to say the one sibling that was winning was Connor, who had this dinner for his father where he's joking with him and they're singing and everyone is laughing and Logan's a real person and Connor's even doing the little teapot song and making fun of his father, which I don't think either of the other three would ever have been able to do. And you're suddenly seeing, wow, you guys completely missed this side of your dad. I thought that scene was incredible.
Yeah, so compare that to the scene where Logan asks everyone to roast him for his birthday and how he was not really there for it. That little video, Connor's "I'm a little teapot, fuck off," was one of my favorite moments of the entire series.
Mine too. And it says so much about this relationship that Connor had that I don't think they realized that he had ever had.
Well, I mean, look who was not there in all of this. Was Connor.
It's the three siblings aren't there. Tom's not there. Greg's not there. It's Connor.
Jerry.
Jerry. Frank.
Carl.
Carl with the singing, the amazing.
And also, who was it?
Carrie was there.
Carrie, who is like, I mean, if you watch her, I mean, she wasn't lying. They really did. She really was smitten for him.
It was a little, you know, Anna Nicole and her 89-year-old.
But no, what I loved about it was like showing those sides of these three old essential heads that have been there and that went out of this deal and whatnot. But also too, if like he's yelled at, we've seen him yell at them and say so much shit to them throughout this series. They're ribbing, but it's essentially what's so funny about like Logan in the first episode of season four saying, "I don't have a lot of friends," or "it's a lonely place," or da da da. You see that and you go, no, he is really friendly with them because he wouldn't have a private dinner with anybody else if it was like he considers those people to be the ones that he can at least smile with more than anybody towards the end of this time, because also too, the other three are in complete isolation from him because of taking the company and whatnot. But Connor didn't waste his moments. Connor didn't have a lot of regrets. It doesn't seem like, because, you know, he does say like instantly he's like, well, he never loved me, but he knows that that's not true. Like of all the kids, he's the one by the end of this episode that's truly the happiest. He's got the house. He's got his little ticket, like his little sticker system. You know, Willa, he's with Willa.
The cow print
They're gonna
couch.
Be fine. I mean, the couch. It, you know, he, the videos, all this stuff. he's gonna be fine. He doesn't care. He's got his little $100 million or what, you know, his little percentage,
and $8 million.
Yeah, he's gonna do just fine.
Because to me, that film with the three siblings watching it was the absolute key to mm-hmm. everyone's yeah. relationship. Mm-hmm. And it was
So why do we think then, I don't know if we're just going to jump into theories yet.
Yes, please.
But why do we think then that Connor was never a realistic choice as a CEO replacement by Logan or outside of the other siblings?
Seemed like he ever wanted it.
Obviously he was running for president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wasn't going to win, but it felt like he would have been the closest to a responsible person.
Yes, but then also too, it's the same guy that's like, you know, we've seen Connor as well too. Like the fact that, yeah, he's the oldest, and he's made that abundantly clear as well when Kendall screwed that up last season, in front of his face. But it's also like he has his moments with his father because he seeks them out, and he's able to do that. But it's not like he's ever shown an interest in the business. You know what I mean?
That's also what makes him the better person for it.
No, it doesn't. Some people just aren't born to do that job.
They've also explained that when he it felt like Logan really left, that the mother ended up in a mental institution, and he was really left, that child was left, and Logan went on with his new family, the new trio, as it can be when someone starts a new family.
I mean, does it also hurt the fact that he's married to essentially a call girl and he wasn't going to go to his wedding?
Right.
Like, think about that. You know
what I mean? Okay, so, there's that.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not as clear as, like, I mean, he, just because you have and can see that side doesn't mean all the way that, you know, you're going to then you're my favorite son or whatnot. Like, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, no, he didn't give a shit about it. But really, at the end.
But to your point that he wasn't, you know, born for a role of CEO. These are all nepo babies. They're all into the roles that they're playing, literally.
But he's always seemed like someone that has his hat in a million different other ventures or other things or other ideas.
Oh, no, he's an idea guy.
And that's why I think Logan's like, I can't give this over to him.
100% of the vote. He's an idiot, like all the rest of them.
Yeah, but I'm
certainly not saying that he is, like, smart. He's just a billionaire.
No,
birth.
Sure. I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
Not worth.
I just want to go back to Mattson for a little bit. Now, Alexander Skarsgård is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
For me, if I have one little point of contention with this whole season, when the Swedes or the Scandinavians, it's a little bit less elegantly written. It's a little more contrived. Like, all of a sudden, Greg is holding a translator and the assistant basically saying the most expository line that you would never hear at all in any other succession. And that has bothered me a bit, because it's nothing about the performances in general, but there's something about this group. Also at the party, they're so exaggerated and just doing things that I haven't bought that as much.
Well, I think they're exactly what they are, which is, they got a lot of money, but they're fake. You know what I mean? Like, they remind me of just the fact that you see all these billionaires who, I have the money to buy something, but do I really need to buy it? No. we're literally living through that right now, essentially with Musk. And I think that it's a little bit different, obviously, in the show, but the parallels there are very interesting about the fact that, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do with this. He is very fake at what he's done. He's built his worth off the back of people that actually did the work, and he's more of a face to it, you know, because they lay the hint down of obviously these false numbers, obviously the fact that other people have done are much better, if not even if he is a coder himself, you know what I mean? And so I've always found that interesting about it, is that it's like a cross between Musk and a little bit of Steve Jobs as well too, of these people that had enormous power and also have enormous celebrity and name brand recognition behind them enough to make this deal. But for Mattson, there's a supreme level of confidence that exudes throughout this entire series at every turn. And he essentially, the reason why I think he wins the deal is because he is a killer and he doesn't care about feelings or relationships, you know, with Shiv or whatnot. He's going to find the best option for him because he's not going to lose this deal. And his rage in this episode was fantastic. Just being like, get up and let's go. Come on. Or like, you know, get Frank on the phone. And then watching Frank in the office, like run around like a chicken with his head cut off. It's
Frank run that.
Yeah. I've never seen Frank run like that. I mean, it just reminds you a lot of how Logan would get the troops ready to go, you know, to stop a vote or something, or to win.
So I actually loved the Greg eavesdropping scene.
God,
so much. Yes, it was a writer's contrivance, but I thought it was an extremely effective one for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, eavesdropping on a conversation is just a pretty great way for, you know, a transference of information to somebody else. And Greg was ultimately the spoiler of so much of this because he was playing so many sides. It was
incredible.
Also why I think a lot of people had all these theories that Greg was going to end up, you know, really coming out on top at the end of this. But it did a couple of things too. I think it is very common when there is a language separation in a group environment and two people feel like they are very safe in their conversation because they don't think other people around them are, you know, can speak or understand that language. So I think the infiltration of that is just a fascinating thing as a piece of storytelling. I think it makes perfect sense that Greg would have an app like that because he probably uses Shazam for like the most popular songs in history because he doesn't know them and he wants to know them and he needs to know them so that he can get to that next conversation. It is absolute, total, like classic Greg to have done that. So for me, it completely worked. But talking about Skarsgård, yeah, absolutely. Amazing work, scary, diabolical, more so than he was on True Blood. There's no fangs here, but there's a lot of blood drawn.
Yeah. Literally and
literally and metaphorically. Oh my God.
I have to go back to the conversation in between the siblings in the room when Shiv has not given her vote. And because I want to talk about Roman and speaking up about the bloodline. And
Oh my God.
The couple of randos, as he says about Kendall's kids. Well, how do you see this? What
I think
that was harsh. That's probably one of the worst things Roman said.
I mean, obviously it all kind of kicks off because of Shiv finding out about Tom, you know, because they found it out because he literally just flat out tells her. And then that goes to that iconic scene between the Greg fight. And Tom in the bathroom, just cat fighting.
I thought they were going to kiss.
And like, finally Greg gets a slap in. I thought he was going to beat the ever. I thought Tom was going to beat.
No,
the-
he won't.
He needs Greg.
Honestly, kill him.
Greg is the new Tom.
Yeah, he is. He is essentially the new Tom. But anyway, I mean, once they got in that room, she was trying to come up with any way to not give this to her brother. I honestly, truly believe. I love Shiv as a character, but I do think that she is heartbroken and petty as fuck for not even every single time that they brought up between the three of them why she can't do it. It is when Logan himself at one point gave it to her. She screwed it up, but he gave it to her. Mm-hmm. Confidently, he gave it to her more than he's given it to the other two. But they have gone around and just come up with every excuse in the book. So finally, when she realizes her estranged husband is going to be the CEO for Madsen, she's going to have a child, and that person could literally take over the business when they're both done, and that's at least a Roy, then she realizes that I can screw Kendall over here because he has done nothing but screw me over. But yes, when, and that's why she brings up.
Was it a murder? He just let him die. That is not murder.
No. Yeah,
he tried to dive in again.
Kill the kid.
Yeah.
He still
killed. He did not kill. That's crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. Let him die. But, how about that? Let a kid
die.
That
moment
how about
was
that?
Like,
we ready
a,
for
like
that?
Can a
we
double say that? Judas. Mm-hmm. Because Roman was on Ken's side, yeah, and he wasn't. And so you just had Shiv and Roman stab, 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 and it was awesome.
But then, like, even Shiv wasn't going to go that far. You could tell, because when she goes, when he goes, well, I mean, she's really, yeah, got bloodline.
Oh, I think like, she was ready, Shiv's though, like, to go back in the boardroom with, did you know he killed somebody? She was.
Oh, yeah.
So she was ready to go there, too.
Oh, I think,
yeah,
she,
but not,
oh,
with
for
the,
sure.
The children, the adopted.
It was,
oh yeah,
particularly savage.
Yes. Yeah, no, the children line was over the line.
Mm-hmm.
But when he said that, I knew it was over. I knew it was done, because Kendall, anytime they've mentioned Kendall's kids, mm-hmm, on this series, he has gone full berserk mode on anyone, his father, just people in general. Hell, even his ex-wife, when she's trying to take the kids out of the city, and he's like, I'm not moving. And then, like, the car just goes around him or whatever.
That's his Achilles
heel. You know
what
I mean? Like,
I mean, being, mm-hmm, a father.
And then he goes right after the stitches.
He's holding his head. But that,
oh,
was,
my God. When he's holding,
like,
his,
he's
face.
Crush him.
Oh.
Yeah, his face. Yeah. Ooh.
I would have.
Ooh.
Face, and he's, yeah. So good.
Yeah,
there, so good.
That's over.
No, but that scene is so, it's so great. And it's what I love. And what I've been thinking about with Shiv is, like, I thought back to season two when, you know, obviously, it's, I think it's like episode four, and she's noticed that Kendall has been very off, been very close to her father. And it's that thing of like, if dad's not around here anymore, will you protect me? Will you essentially save me from myself? And I watched that scene 2 days ago, and I thought back to, one, I knew Shiv was always going to screw up this deal, because I love Shiv, but she screws up everything that she touches. She does, her marriage, her relationship with her father, her relationship now with her brothers. It'd be fat. If I saw a movie or like an extra season, love to see her as mom Shiv. That
Are
would be interesting.
Are you kidding? I've never wanted someone to have an abortion faster.
Oh my God, Eric.
Poor child is absolutely.
Yes, that's his theories in that marriage.
But yeah, but no, I you know, I don't even know where to go after I just brought up the abortion. But no, I think that she clearly is sitting there right about to realize, because it's the moment when they see the chair, him sit in,
yeah,
the chair,
Logan's,
and
chair,
the editing back to both of their faces going. It's one thing to talk about it drunk on an island in the Caribbean. It is another thing to see it in person and see him go full on cocky mode with Stewie in the room and, mm-hmm, and know exactly what you're going to, it's exactly what they feared. It would go right to his head. And at that point, she goes, Tom, I could easily manipulate. I can still figure out a way to get in there through him and get everything I want. My child will be able to get whatever they want. I will be perfectly, perfectly fine because I'm going to get my payout. Plus, I'll still be with all this money in the company and still with a direct line of power. I will be totally fine. It is a smart move.
I would say it's a shrewd move. Yeah. Smart.
It's very shrewd. It's very cold and calculated. Well, is what it is. But it's also, it's crazy. Also, too, I agree with Kendall. It's absolutely insane. But then when you see it happen, it's like it makes sense because in a lot of ways too, I truly believe this. She is saving him from himself. She's saving Rome from all this. Because I think that she sees that what Mattson's going to be like and what could happen could be a catastrophe. So it could be also throw it on Wamsgams, right? And like have him suck bad up. Yeah, exactly. Protect her brothers. And yet she's sitting there at the end in the car once again, taking all the hits from every single man that has been, you know, essentially in the room for between her brothers and Mattson and Tom and all of them, father's legacy. It's incredible.
As many of the women did this season, this was a particularly rough season for women. But that's also why I started talking about Shiv and that conversation that they have, because long before this scene at the end in the car and she makes this decision, she's actually asking Tom on the phone, wouldn't it be practical for us? Would you be interested in having this relationship? Because in every single way, it would be practical and easy, and you'd be married to your husband, as he says.
Yeah, she is playing a little bit of chess there, a little bit, where I think in general, the siblings can barely see past the edge of their nose. Barely. Yeah. And she is looking at multiple scenarios.
She is a strategist after all.
Yeah, not just the one where like Kendall, where they are the only end game. She was looking at a lot of them, and that's kind of why she ends up where she ends up. I don't want to say she wins.
She doesn't.
Because she doesn't, but she is in a situation of her own creation.
Well, yeah, she created it because she also put the idea in Mattson's head of Tom to begin with. We see in those early scenes of like, yeah, he's a big enough idiot. You can like, because she's just thinking about ATN. You're talking about seeing past herself. He's just thinking, you know, staying at ATN, not about CEO. So she basically gave Tom the damn job by putting that idea in Mattson's head.
Yeah, because he was already a cuck for her, and now he is for Mattson as well.
Yep.
So it makes perfect sense. She does. I mean, that political cartoon of Shiv being the puppet master for Mattson also works for Tom in that sense too.
I mean, but also I think the tables kind of turn when for Mattson on both of them.
Yeah, like, I mean, I believe that
he's the puppet master by the end.
Destroy ATN and Waystar worse than Musk is doing with Twitter. He'll take this 100-year-old company and it's absolutely over. Run it into the ground. It's done.
He said it clearly as he did. I mean, he's like, I'm going to get another car and it's going to get dirty.
Yeah.
And what is that? A pain sponge, right?
Pain sponge.
Yeah. And it's like, you're going to take all the heat for this. It's a lot of really what Kendall said to Hugo at the end of last episode of episode 9, where he's like, there's going to be a lot of shit that hits the fan, but it's going to be millions if you just, and then the wolf. So essentially Tom becomes a CEO house dog, essentially, to take all that pain. And he's woofing by the end of it. But then, because it's not like Logan, because like when you get the iconic shot of Tom walking into the car, not like it's a quick forging of the C the way it would for Logan. It's a little delayed, and then they start. It's the CEO. You know what I mean? And that's maybe an adjustment period, but it's also like it's still Tom. Like, you can see Frank and Carl kind of talking. You know, like they're the Muppet guys on. You know, and the old guys from the Muppets were like, you know, you're gonna stick around one more time, or are you gonna get out of here? And he's like, I don't know. And then they're already talking and they're putting them in photos, even though they're going to fire them all. It's yeah. hilarious.
And the photos.
Yeah, the photos.
Interesting choices.
I think also, too, not a lot of people are really talking about, because everybody's talking about Roman leaving and going and sitting with the cocktail or the martini in the bar. No one's really talking about how he kind of has to kick and scream his way into the room to sign the papers, and the dig that Mattson, the look.
Well, no, at first he's like, I'm not going to do that. And then, yeah. And then it's like, get out of my way. I'm doing this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, it is a little kicking and screaming, to be fair. Cause he's like, I don't want to go do this. I don't want to go do this. I don't want to take the photos. I told you guys, I don't want to take the photos. It's like, fine. I'll just go do it. I'll find it. It's mostly like, fine. I'll just go do it. And it's all the emotions just brimming up. But then like Mattson, like just almost sitting there essentially being like, it looks like he said, might've said something a little under his breath, but he definitely is basically like smiling the entire time. He knows he's won. He's like, oh, bye, Roman. You know what I mean? And it's like, he's like, I thought we were cool, bro, essentially, or whatnot. And you know, playing it up for the cameras. And it's so fake. It's so great. And it's the final, you know, sort of nail in all their coffins, too. And but I love that. But at the bar, his smile.
So
I don't,
free.
I mean, so free. Gets to be a slime ball. It's going to go back to this.
I tweeted something similar earlier, and I don't want any impression that I think, you know, Roman is like a good guy. He fucking.
Oh,
he's a piece of shit.
He supported a fucking Nazi loving president. He's not a good guy.
He's not.
But it is a really like the closest of the three to be able to maybe reinvent himself.
He always is.
He's you know, he might just always just be the biggest baby too.
I think the reason why everybody attracts themselves so much to Roman is because they attract themselves to Kieran Culkin as an actor, and he's a very well liked actor and a really like person, like most of these actors are. But Roman himself as a character is a horrible, horrible person. I mean, like there's the election episode alone is, you know, when he's mocking Shiv. It's so funny that he's defending her at the end of this episode, because like it's literally a couple of days have separated from the events of this stuff.
Can we talk about that? This whole thing is like a week.
It's 3 weeks.
It's like three.
10 episodes.
10 days.
I mean, that's bananas.
It's great. I love it. I thought that some of the seasons in the past, because of their sort of how they would use time, and it was felt very, you know, like months would go by and you're like, wait, what? We just skipped a couple of months and it doesn't matter or whatever. Being more contained this season has made it incredible.
Yeah, fuck these like season finale time jumps and stuff.
No.
That was not a dig at Barry.
I knew you were trying to do that.
I promise it was not, because I love the Barry finale. But yeah, time jump finales are a cheat.
Mm-hmm. They are a cheat code.
Which is not what Barry did.
No. They did that mid-season.
Yes.
Well, I guess in the finale.
Also in the finale.
But I just love the final shot. I mean, obviously it's my number one boy. It's Kendall in a circle of pain.
Let's get into Kendall, because we've now talked about Roman's finale and Shiv's and Kendall. Jeremy Strong gave an interview this morning where he was talking about that. For him, he really saw that this is it. This is death. He's walking to Battery Park. He even filmed, apparently, one time jumping over the railings, the barrier, and he sees this as he's going to kill himself. And there's nothing left for him. And it's so powerful. And it's so powerful that they ended it where they ended.
I'm glad they kept Kendall's ending that we got and not that filmed one, because that would have been bullshit.
I agree.
No, it would have been accurate, because I do think he goes and kills himself.
I think he probably does too, but like the other, we don't need to see it.
He does a rap and then he kills himself. It's a big theatrical piece.
Taking the L. The O.
Yeah, he's taking the L from the L to the O to the G to the A to the N. I think that, I mean, he is the product of what his father inflicted on him, of what his aunt and uncle, what Logan's aunt and uncle inflicted on to Logan. That speech that Cromwell gives, which is an all-time speech. When they frame back the editing again to Kendall's face talking about the polio, and you sit there and you go, all this could have been avoided, and Kendall's obsession and his tragedy would have been avoided if Logan's tragedy didn't get put at his doorstep and his fault. And so his son, he is his father because of the fact that he, in a lot of ways, but especially in this of that, Logan's life, while bountiful, has been with so much tragedy and sadness. And his son is going to, he's got two kids. He's got all the money in the world now from this deal, you know, that his siblings have. He could, and they also won the deal for Pierce, which we never found out how that ended up working out. And probably that's things dead. But essentially, he has his own freedom too. And he could be like Roman, where he's like, drink a martini, you know, but have my Joker smile and move on with my life.
The number one boy.
It's his only purpose in life. So to kill himself makes sense.
The whole walk he does here at the end with Colin trailing him mirrors the whole walk in first episode of Colin trailing Logan in Central Park after Logan had just talked about death himself.
Exactly, yeah. Which is why I think even the framing of it with Colin in the background has to give some credence to the idea that Kendall is not going to die or kill himself, that that part of his similarity and trajectory of his father is in place. Having Colin there and framing that last shot with him in the shot is
Colin's not going to let him.
Yeah, definitely he wouldn't let him because we get pretty
either that or I'm
that Colin quickly saves him if in the other sequence.
No, this is what Jeremy Strong himself was filming this. Yeah. He had to get into, I mean, Jesse Armstrong may have a completely different theory.
Colin is now, just like Logan said, basically like it's driving Miss Daisy, like you're my only friend. Mm-hmm. That's it. All he has is Colin, just like Logan, really, at the end of the day.
Though if Kendall does kill himself, man, Colin's got to retire because he's just killing guys.
Seriously, how do you put that on your resume? Talk to your last employers? No.
I killed two Roy. Yeah, exactly. They were also my friends. You know what I mean?
It's going to be Garden of
I love
a mall.
I love the scene. I love the scene at the reception after the funeral where Kendall talks to him. Being like, you know, oh, I've read your transcripts with your therapist, which is like gross.
Yeah.
But also like, if you need somebody to talk to me.
Yeah.
And Colin's face of like, oh my God, I have essentially a friend back. It's like,
well, more like I am trapped.
Exactly. That's what I was saying.
I'm trapped in this stuff too.
He doesn't have a choice.
But I also like love his reaction on the tarmac in episode 3 breaks my heart.
It was
because
a lot.
It was so much. I mean, like, I feel so bad.
Like, if anyone should be jumping over the railing right now, it should be Colin.
Yes.
Yeah, he's like,
because he's fucked.
I didn't get any money from this deal. Bye. You know?
That's why that scene, the one we were referring to before, the dinner with Jerry and Frank and Carrie, even Kendall saw, wow, Dad did have some nice evenings and not just Colin. Kendall doesn't even have that. Mm-mm. I don't think he could pull together anyone.
No. I don't, like, that's the thing. It's like he's run out of chips to play at the casino. Like he has no way to go at this point. Like, sure, maybe, I mean, obviously he's been at a low point. Maybe hits the drugs, maybe hits the sauce, whatever. You know what I mean? Maybe it's a downward spiral. Maybe, you know, I mean, again, we don't really get a lot of clarity about Pierce and where that's going to go. But that really, a lot of Pierce was contingent upon Shiv because they like Shiv. So if that deal doesn't have her involved, or really doesn't have all three of them involved, I don't think that Nan would want to give that over to Madsen.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the new president.
you know, is that does he buy Pierce and go after him?
I think that deal's just done. Yeah.
It's got to be just dead in the water.
Radar anyway, and it's only $10 billion. Who cares?
Yeah, it's only just like, you know, it's something you can't. It's pocket change. It's pocket change.
Nothing.
Yeah. I want to raise then, Eric, if $10 billion is nothing for Awards Watch, then.
Sure. Well,
it seems like Eric has it. So, you know.
There's a lot of blood to clean up, Hugo.
Are there any theories we missed? We talked a little about how we think this is going to go for Tom.
Not going to go good for him.
Oh, I like the theory, and it's not really a theory. It's just a funny joke that Willa's hole. I have a reading in like 6 months or whatever is her play is this. Of Succession. Yes. It's this, it's all of this. I love that.
That would be, I want,
come on. That's giving Willa too much credit of actually needing or wanting to do something. She's living the best life.
The play she
does want to be a person outside of being seen as a call girl, and she's going to get her cow print couch.
She doesn't want to go to Slovenia or wherever.
What a life, though, that she gets to live. I mean, good Lord. Good for her. She's the real one.
What
winner.
Life?
I mean, she's going to...
What are you talking about here?
She's part of a multi-million...
The whole thing of the show is that money doesn't buy happiness. That's the entire thing.
Yeah, but when Connor dies, she'll have all the money in the
world. Yeah, but did you see her face?
Because he's going to be stupid enough and give it to her.
When Shiv said... Connor will probably not be ambassador anywhere, so he'll be staying here with you. Her whole plan was the cow print couch and her play, and
he was
pretty
excited to be like,
"Oh yeah, well that's without
Connor."
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's also true because, like, I mean, obviously
the 2 month itch.
I mean,
like, Roman.
No, I think the one thing that like that Shiv kind of throws out there, and it seems true, is that Mencken isn't going to be president. It feels like he's going to get super challenged on it, and then therefore. The deal will still go through with the Democratic president, but obviously there could be investigations that go into it and that leave that in there. But also there will also be investigations into Mencken, and it might lead back to them as well. It definitely will lead back to Roman. Because of his involvement and everything.
Wisconsin, I mean, Wisconsin is absolutely a future downfall for everything that's happening.
Exactly. For all of them. So enjoy your deal now.
Exactly.
Smile while
in
you
that
still
martini,
can.
Roman, because...
go on a little private island, buy it, and absolutely get the fuck out.
Can I say one last thing about Greg? I think the sticker scene might be one of the funniest things I've seen on the show, because obviously the sticker system and the making fun of it was freaking hilarious. It's one of the last like unifying things, like of Roman just being like digging at this stupid like put two stickers on, but if somebody then it goes to a third sticker and a tiebreaker and all this shit. It was great. I loved it. But then putting a sticker on Greg, basically like, bitch, you're mine. It was so good, and
well, it is
just the way that Tom's able to use the dialogue to kind of just like fish Greg along on like a reel of like, you think you're gonna die or you think you're gonna stay here with me, like it's so manipulative.
Greg's the
so
only
great.
One he can abuse.
Tom tells, you know, Greg, you're a piece of shit, but that sticker is like, but you are my piece of shit.
And then like, oh, even Judas is in the room. Matson's lying about that. That was great. I loved it.
That was amazing.
I loved it. That was so good. So good. He's probably going to run ATN. If it's still around. He's going to get Tom's job.
He is Tom. He is the new Tom.
Yeah. It's great.
It's insane.
I love
break
it.
A few Gregs to make a Tomlet.
Did we ever figure out the pitch that Peter was trying to make? Like what it actually was?
But
it was creamy. That's what I got.
Yes, I like that it was creamy.
It was so good. I just love Kendall getting up from the chair and just being like, "No, fuck this. I'm gonna answer my phone." It's so good.
It's a good thing he did.
A good
too.
Episode. Yeah.
Oh my god. That was Peter. What a fucking weirdo.
What a weirdo.
Yeah, that relationship. Why mother married him is a bit of a mystery to me, but
probably the opposite of Logan, to be fair.
Yeah.
Well, yes. You know, yeah. And
just a complete dummy. And she gets to control the power dynamics of that relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than the way it used to be before.
Oh, you know? Peter makes Tom look like an absolute genius. So.
Like mommy, like daughter. You know what I mean? So when it comes to that. But no, I think it's a perfect ending for it. Because it's led to an hour and a half discussion on it. And you could really even go further into it if you wanted to.
Is this it for Succession? Do you think Jesse Armstrong will make a movie in 3 years, or will...
No, I don't want that.
No, we don't want it, but will they?
I don't think so, because this is one of the great benefits of knowing that your show is ending and getting to write the ending of it rather than being canceled, like Deadwood or something. Deadwood got to come back with a movie.
Rude.
No, Deadwood got to come back with a movie because it wasn't...
It didn't finish.
But Sopranos did too.
They don't need it, and God damn, they better not do it.
Well, Sopranos had like a prequel.
Yeah, but I mean, they ended it, and then they still...
Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, that finale is great,
that
too.
That finale's incredible.
I know a lot of people crap all over that finale, but it's wonderful. I think that...
Shout out to Nicholas Patel.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have not for...
Real MVP of this whole
all four seasons, especially this episode. Holy shit.
Holy shit.
Episode 3-2, episode 9. I mean, he is this is the best maybe work of his career.
Oh, he's a master.
It's the best.
You know, he's incredible.
Some of the best work in television posing ever.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I think that the reason why I don't see like a maybe there's a spinoff, I don't know, like Jerry's World or something like that. I don't know. Or something. But I don't see like a continuation of this full thing at all, because Armstrong's been on the record saying that he had this ending in mind for such a long time, and he had nobody ever told him to not do it in the writer's room, and no one ever told him to like maybe you should do it this way or try to get off that path. So in a lot of ways, he got to tell the story he wanted to tell. It's honestly perfect the way it is. If it did continue, I mean, obviously he would have to write it. Mylan would have to direct it, because his direction is fantastic. But it would be something that I don't think it's something I need, because honestly, this last episode felt like a movie itself. And felt like the culmination of four seasons and putting it all together and everything. I think that they've done everything that they need to do.
You also have to leave your audience and your viewers with something that they can chew on and talk about, like we're talking about. If you then just give them an ending, there's not much to do other than saying I hated it or I loved it. You don't get to theorize, and you don't get to do anything. So
also, there is a component of not having Logan in this. It's like in, you know, Star Wars, like Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, like,
yeah, I'm glad he didn't show up. Like, surprise, I'm not
like as a force ghost.
Ghost Logan.
Yeah, AI Logan. You know what I mean? Something like that. No, I think it's
because I was a bit worried about that, because I was reading, I don't know if it was Clayton or someone who said that they have submitted him for lead actor for Emmys. And to be able to do that, you have to have more than four episodes or whatever, but he only had four. So he had to return in this last one. So I was like, how will he be returning?
Came back in such a powerful way.
Not quite. The only rules or stipulations about submission is guest versus non-guest. To be able to be eligible as a guest performer, you have to be in less than 50% of the season. Anything over that, you have to be supporting or lead, but you can choose whatever you want, which is why when he chose lead was such a funny fucking like Logan thing to do, because he doesn't have the votes.
No. it's perfect.
But yeah, but it's perfect at the same time. He really should have submitted in supporting. I mean, Skarsgård has more episodes.
That's a lot of ego right there. That's the reason why he's in lead as opposed to supporting.
It is, but kind of at the end of the day, even though I know it's going to get a whole bunch of Emmys, I want like everyone to get nominated, but only Matthew McFadden to win.
Well, he is the
could happen.
Yeah. I mean, he is the art. He won last year, so
yeah, he is an undeniable front runner.
Yeah.
Whereas the Strong, Culkin, and Cox are going to be.
Oh, I don't think it's. Well, that I mean, if we want to get into that, we can.
A whole nother thing. Whole nother thing. Which
whole nother thing?
We're going to be doing in ours.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do it on both. But I mean, I don't think it's actually as competitive as people think it is.
Hmm.
I think Jeremy Strong will win in a landslide.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't buy the Karen Culkin stuff because if he couldn't even win in supporting, he's not going to beat Strong in lead and Strong. He is essentially the I know he's the eldest boy, but he's also considered by many to already be a lead character in this, and that final shot is
but
him.
I do think the Culkin falling apart at the funeral scene is what a lot.
Oh
of
yeah, but also
yeah, but then look what happens right after that. Kendall slash Strong comes in and saves it.
I mean Jeremy Strong. I mean,
but then equally compelling performance.
Yeah, and then I mean, like as we talked about, like the crying scene here in this episode, but then there's the complete meltdown, in the conference room. You know,
it's competitive. I think it's competitive.
I think I'll take the guy that's won a lead one already, and they like to repeat in that category.
No, they don't. They do exactly the opposite.
For iconic characters, they like to repeat. Look at Brian.
They do
Cranston.
Exactly the opposite.
Brian Cranston.
Eight years. New winner. New
4 years.
New winner. New winner. New winner. So
well, I don't think it's going to be a new winner this year.
Just saying.
Yeah. Maybe a Critics' Choice.
Disgusting brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, so Succession ended incredibly. Barry's ended. Somebody somewhere. I mean, HBO's Max now. What are we going to be watching on? I mean, is this an end?
Not
of
the
an
idol.
Era?
Not the idol.
No, not the idol.
Fuck that.
That's only like five episodes, to be fair. Everybody should watch Perry Mason. It's a great show. It gets lost in the shuffle because Barry and Succession was on, but there's two seasons of it. The second season was absolutely fantastic. You know, I think it'll be interesting because, I mean, we saw a lot of their slate for what's to come, but a lot of it's next year. Like, I think The Sympathizer could be something where that's the next water cooler event thing. Obviously The Last of Us isn't going to come out till probably 2025. It's all going to really depend for the future on obviously the writer's strike, potentially SAG strike, PGA, just Hollywood strike in general. But in terms of what they have going forward, I mean, they'll have something because they are the best studio. I mean, HBO is the best, network in terms of quality Sunday night dominant television. I mean, we said the same thing when Game of Thrones ended and the Sopranos and various other times in there, and then what was so great about like Game of Thrones is then like, I think it's like a year later or something, or maybe, or whatnot, but the Mayor of Easttown comes out of nowhere, or Watchmen comes out, and these mini series have done well for them too. So it doesn't have to be these 4 years.
As long as we don't have a Succession prequel series, I'll be fine.
Well, we will have a Parasite series still sometime down the road from, they said that it's still in early development. So they have plenty of opportunities to create something original.
I would rather see people go into the HBO back catalog and revisit or see things for the first time, like Leftovers, like you mentioned, definitely, mm-hmm. or Deadwood,
obviously,
The Wire, and get some classic,
Oz
stuff out of the way. Oz, oh my
God. 6 feet Under, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, maybe we're just all underestimating the Sex and the City spinoff season 2 coming out. You know what I mean? Eric's number one show.
And just like crap.
And just like his favorite character, Chaz.
Jay Diaz,
that's right.
Yeah, I'm going to let you guys go next. I know you have more Succession to talk about the rest of the day. Thank you so much. Thank you. And thank you for talking to me about this. It's so much fun to talk about. I'm going to miss it so much.
Thank you, Christine. Oh, yeah. I'm glad that it was such a great final season and final episode so that we can talk good things about it instead of talking shit.
Yeah. It's good. It's nice to have a little battle royale once in a while, but this was fun to be on the same page. Yeah. Thanks, you guys.
No, it's always wonderful. And I will also say for your listeners or any listeners of ours that have come over here for the first time, please go back and listen to all of Christina's wonderful interviews with the Succession cast and crew and everybody. Particularly the Brian Cox interview at the beginning of the season was just wonderful. And we talked about it. Just there's so many moments of exactly who Brian Cox is, and I absolutely loved it, but you knocked it out of the park. It's a great, amazing.
Thank you. That's funny because I interviewed him for the first season for an hour and then the last season, and he definitely got grumpier from one to the other. It's really interesting to listen to both of
Logan
them.
Logan really seeped in at those couple of years in between.
I don't think he appreciated Game being killed off.
He did.
Nobody ever does. You know what I mean? Unless you're like Harrison Ford and you're like, kill me off in Star Wars.
And for your listeners and for my listeners also, you guys have to listen to Awards Watch podcasts, and you guys are going to be doing, if you want even more Succession talk with your crew, the amazing crew that you guys have, you'll be continuing this conversation. Hopefully not better than this one, but you know.
Well, I will also be talking about Barry's series finale, which was incredible. Yes. And we'll also get into a little bit more
awards
just
talk,
kind of early Emmy talk. It won't be full on predictions or anything, but it'll just be a loose discussion over all that stuff and everything. And that'll be coming out later this week.
Thank you so much.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. No, right.